Today, the great airbrush scandal. Hello again, I'm Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. I've got a post today with John Adams, our economist friend. And today we're going to look in detail at some of the potential scenarios ahead. Hello, John. Good to see you back again.
How are you going?
Very good. Have you got your gloomy hat on today?
I do indeed.
There's a surprise. So I did a post the other day about testing, right? And looking at some of the issues around stress testing and the way that the banks are actually under review by some of the regulators.
That's right.
And what's interesting about that is it got quite a lot of attention and coverage. But a lot of people were saying, is this really realistic? Is it likely to happen? So I thought perhaps today we could spend some time talking further about the stress testing.
Absolutely.
Okay. So maybe a good place to start is, why do we stress test in the first place?
So obviously the reason why the regulators like APRA or the RBA would be doing stress testing on the banks is to ensure that the banks would be able to endure severe economic conditions if those conditions come about. So it is to, in theory, an objective test to ensure that the banks won't fail, because historically when you get banks becoming insolvent, that causes all sorts of economic havoc.
So it's more than PR, is what you're saying?
It should be more than PR, but okay. Unfortunately, what we're going to see today is that the APRA stress test was completely PR.
Right. Because, of course, the Fed also does stress tests on the banks in the US, right?
That is correct.
And they actually publish information down to an individual bank level so that you can actually see the capital that they've got and how the capital would change under the stress conditions.
Of course. So where I think it would be good to sort of start this conversation is that obviously when the APRA chairman about 2.5 weeks ago gave his speech about preparing for a rainy day, he talked about the stress testing that was done last year. He said that under a particular set of economic parameters, the banks would lose about $40 billion in terms of capital losses. Lindsay David from LF Economics disputed that figure and said that the figure was close to $298 billion over 3 years, which is the same period that the APRA assumed, and then you came up with a calculation of about $310 billion over 5 years. So I think, just to go back for the viewers, I think, why don't you just surmise, how did you come up with your figure, which is obviously about a quarter of a trillion out compared to what APRA has said publicly?
Sure, yeah, it's a bit different, isn't it? So APRA gave us some indications of the sort of assumptions they made around their stress tests, and it was pretty high level, to be honest. But they said things like unemployment will be, 11%, I think it
11%,
was?
11%, that's right.
There will be a fall of GDP by 4%. The assumption is that the international funding markets will be frozen so that you can't fund books overseas, and a few other things too, right?
Including that there would be an operational risk event to recognise what's happening at the Bank Royal Commission.
Right. Yeah. So basically, their gloomiest scenario is what they were trying to go for, right? And of course, the headline there was 4% GDP drop, which we'll come back to, because I think
4% over 3 years.
Over 3 years, okay.
And that is important.
Okay. So what I did was I took that base information, mm-hmm. right, and brought my core market model to the table. That's our surveys, where we actually have information about all of our households and what they're up to, and also my small business models.
Yeah.
Right? And in there, I've got various sensitivities that I can run based on changes in employment, based on changes in interest rates and other factors.
Yeah.
And so what I did is I basically took that data and ran it through my model and said, well, so what would happen? Okay. And the unemployment thing is a big deal.
Yeah.
Because, of course, you've got to assume that some people who are going to be unemployed will be people with mortgages.
Yeah.
And therefore, they'll be unable to service those mortgages.
Mm-hmm.
And that means essentially you start seeing arrears in the mortgage sector rising.
Yep.
At the same time, consumers are unable or unwilling to spend because they don't have the money.
That's right.
And so there's no retail growth. In fact, there's a retail sort of depression actually,
yep.
created by that. So that spills over into the broader economy.
Yeah.
That then starts to hit the small business sector,
mm-hmm.
many of whom are very reliant on you know, the consumer end of things. So that spreads some contagion there too, and many of those small businesses are also people who have mortgages.
That's right.
So it's effectively factor on factor on factor. And then you've got the problem that if the banks are unable to fund their mortgage book, they're going to be struggling to maintain their funding base, right? They probably will have to pay more for the funds that they can get. So that's probably an indication that rates might go up when you, the last thing you want.
Yeah.
But also importantly, if the banks are seeing the value of property falling, and I think it was a 35% drop.
That's correct.
Assumed,
Over 3 years. That's right, yep.
35%, that's a big drop, right? So that means that many of the households that are in difficulty because they're no longer employed are also seeing the value of their property going down.
That's right.
So I put that into the model as well. And basically I got to the realization that it's unlikely that the banks would be able to foreclose on those households because there are too many of them.
Yep.
Right? So the banks are going to have to effectively deal with a whole bunch of people who have little ability to service their loans.
Mm-hmm.
That means the loans are going to have to be restructured. That means that they're going to have to forego interest payments or something, right? And they're going to have to write down the value of those loans in the books.
So just on that point, when you say restructure, does restructure mean default or does restructure mean renegotiation of loan terms?
Renegotiation of loan terms.
Right, okay.
Because there's a point beyond which you cannot have more defaults happening.
Yep.
Because it's a cascading effect, effectively, right? Because what happened in the US, so there was a whole bunch of defaults initially, but then effectively there was some changes that were made to allow people to restructure and repay and do all sorts of things to keep the home.
Yep.
Right. Because think about this. What happens if 10% of the market defaults and the banks have this massive backlog of properties that actually are no longer worth what they thought they were worth and you can't sell it because nobody's buying? So it's just a dead asset.
Yep.
So it's actually worth more to the banks to keep the loan going in some way. So I plumbed all that in and then I looked at the sort of the trajectory over 5 years. Not three, but five.
Yep.
Because it takes time for this to work through the economy.
Sure. Right?
And one of the things about APRA's sort of charts suggests it was a short, sharp, and then it recovered quickly. Right. I'm a bit skeptical of that personally. And looking at my modelling, even with a 4% drop in GDP, this is a 3 to 5 year thing. So I looked at it over 5 years, not three.
Yeah.
And then I basically figured out what the number would be in terms of the bottom line impact on the banks.
Right, okay.
And that's where I get my just over 300 billion.
Okay, now a couple of clarifying questions there. So does the 310 billion include that any repossessed properties, if there was to be repossessions, would be resold on the market? Or did you present a gross figure of what the gross losses to the banks would be before the banks would be able to take any repossessed properties and put them back on the market?
So I've assumed that they will activate lender's mortgage insurance and I've assumed that they will initially sell some properties and get some value back.
Right,
but
okay.
That will effectively taper out as the situation gets worse.
Sure.
Right.
Sure. Okay. Now, a $310 billion loss over 5 years, what does that look like in the newspapers?
It would make significantly worrying headlines. I mean, this is bigger than what would have happened in the UK or close to what happened in the US in terms of the bank's ability to handle this. It would be troublesome. There would be probably two banks who would require assistance from either the RBA or from the government or both to continue to trade under those conditions.
And when you say two banks, you mean two of the big four? Or
correct.
Two of the big four.
Yes.
And if that assistance is not given, what would happen in that situation?
They would have to be radically restructured or they'd fail.
Or they'd fail.
Yeah.
Right. Okay. So obviously that is obviously quite important that based on APRA's scenario, you're basically saying that the situation could be more catastrophic than what APRA said, because effectively APRA, the statement by the chairman was $40 billion losses over 3 years. It is a hit, it's a significant hit, but the banks can survive and the economy will bounce back. But you're saying that under their scenario it could be a lot worse than what the chairman actually said on the public record.
Yeah, for me the critical thing is this unemployment rate of 11%. It seems to me that reading his speech, he was suggesting that there will be no impact on their ability to repay their loans. And I find that quite surprising, because I don't see that in my modelling at all. I think that the unemployment rate would be the trigger for a lot of the other issues that we're talking about.
Sure, sure. Now, one thing that I think is significant to bring in the conversation at this point is that, so in previous episodes that you and I have done, I have made this point that this is the biggest debt bubble in Australian history. At the same time, it is the biggest debt bubble in the history of the world. Now, where I came up with this statement is that the RBA in 2007, one of the deputy governors went on the public record and said that in 2007, the debt in the Australian system was bigger than the 1880s and the 1920s.
For Australia, we have data on credit going back 150 years. And it is certainly the case that there is no domestic precedent for what has happened over the past 30 years. The closest previous experiences were those in the 1880s and the 1920s.
Mr. Battaglino didn't say why credit growth collapsed after the 1880s and the 1920s, but to anyone who knows their history, it's an ominous parallel. In both cases, the credit binge preceded a major depression.
And we had a depression in 1892, and we had a depression in 1931. So obviously that's quite significant. So I wrote a recent piece which is published on the As Good As Gold Australia website, and I looked into the APRA, the APRA economic scenario, and I thought to myself, well, if we are in the biggest debt bubble in the history of the country, and we have had two depressions in the past, what actually happened in those two depressions relative to the scenario that APRA published in the chairman's speech? And what I found was that in both depressions, real GDP fell by 10% in the first 12 months, whereas APRA has assumed that GDP would fall by 4% over 3 years, which by the chairman's own admission was less severe than the Irish housing crisis or what happened in the United States 10 years ago. For me, that this is a quite significant issue, that you have them coming up effectively with a Mickey Mouse scenario that has no basis in sort of historical experience in this country. And then obviously you've got 10% fall first 12 months. What most Australians don't realise is that the 1892 depression was actually more severe in Australia compared to the 1930s, because we actually did have bank failures. And the 1890 depression was run up by bank speculation that then sort of cascaded into one of the banks in London going bankrupt, Barings Bank. And that in the second year, GDP fell by 7%, a further 7% on top of the first 10% in the first 12 months. So effectively 17% over 2 years in the 1892 depression, and then only about 10% in the 1931 depression. So I guess for me is that should have been the benchmark which APRA should have tested against. Now, they may have, we don't know, but what I sort of concluded in my article, and obviously we'll sort of include it as part of the notes on YouTube, is to say that if you and Lindsay David calculated that the losses would be in the order of 298 to 310 billion, and that the historical experience is at least 2.5 times worse than what APRA has assumed, well, then I just sort of doing a linear extrapolation, assumed that the losses to the banks would be about 2.5 times bigger than what you would have assumed. Although having said that, because the debt bubble today is bigger than any time in Australian history, if you did have an overseas bank that collapsed, the fall in GDP would be, in theory, substantially more than 10% in the first 12 months. So if that were to happen, we're talking north of $745.75 trillion in terms of losses to the banks. I'm going to try to do a further article about what that actually means. But from what if your figure at 310 says two of the big four may be in trouble, well, if it's $750 trillion, I think the whole system in itself could be at risk.
Right, because that quantum of capital loss, that's more than would be available from the Reserve Bank liquidity funds and those sorts of things, right? And it would be probably hard to see how even the government could grab that amount of money and throw it back at the banks.
Indeed. So from the preliminary research I've done, it seems that the loss, the entire financial system can take losses of about $650 billion. So you've got the reserves of the bank, which is about $300 billion. You've got the committed liquidity facility, the CLF, which is about $248 billion. And then you've got these hybrid securities, which can be bailed in. And that's obviously separate to mum and dad deposits. So combining those three layers of capital reserves, you're looking at $650 billion. And obviously, when I wrote this article, I'm talking to, you know, a few members of parliament, advisors, and saying, well, have you actually thought about what if the losses actually are higher than the total amount of reserves that the system can take, and what does that actually mean? And what I can tell is that there is no plan that is clear in the minds of certain politicians in federal parliament about what would the Australian situation be if we actually repeated what happened in 1892 or 1931. And the fact that there is no clear thinking on this, and you've got the chairman of APRA putting out completely Mickey Mouse scenarios that have no bearing to economic history, that is scary. And to be honest, my confidence in the institutions that we trust to regulate the economy has collapsed because of what I've actually discovered examining the scenario that the chairman put forward in his speech.
That's very interesting, because I read that speech and almost fell off my chair as well, not having done the work that you've done, but thinking, if that really is the scenario that he thinks is the worst case, and yet it was 40 billion, there seemed to be a disconnection. And what you're telling me is that's only the sort of the tip of the iceberg, right? Because there's a whole bunch of additional stuff. And if you really want a really severe scenario to think about, then you've got to go much more extreme than the one that he spoke about.
Of course, because in the Great Depression, so in the 1930s, unemployment rose in this country to 32%. Now there was no national economic data, unemployment data in the 1890s. Mm. So unemployment probably would have been 35% plus. House prices could have easily fallen by 70-80% in the 1890s. So the scenario that they've put forward is to me, it seems like pure window dressing to reassure the public that everything is fine. Now the question I have is that do they honestly believe that this is what, because their words was this is a severe but plausible scenario. So are they that naive to assume that this is the worst it could get, or have they actually done the work inside APRA, but because of how scary the real situation is, they can't tell the public, because if they did, there could be a run on the bank.
Right. And it's interesting you mentioned run on the bank, because one of the most interesting things that I saw in the GFC was in the UK when Northern Rock essentially went wrong, right? And what happened there was that the government basically gave them money to help them through initially, and that they thought would solve the problem, but actually it made the problem a whole lot worse. And there was a very famous example of a particular commentator who actually said, everything's fine. And that was enough to trigger the biggest run there. So the following day, they had all these shots of people queuing around the corner trying to get their money out of the bank. So it shows you how sensitive the whole environment is if you start talking about this stuff.
Of course. But it's something I've seen in federal politics for the last 10 years plus, that that people believe that economic activity can be boosted if people feel confident. But we've allowed ourselves to get into the situation where politicians can't talk about the real situation because they're accused of talking down the economy. They're driving down confidence. And for me, I'm confident if I know that the fundamentals of the economy are sound. Mm. But to perpetuate propaganda and to convince the public that everything is fine and you should be confident when the foundations are the most nightmarish set of parameters since the First Fleet, it is just crazy.
And it's also worth reflecting on that in the year before the banks in Ireland crashed, the regulators there were saying precisely the same things. They were saying the banks are well capitalised, we've run the stress test, there are no issues at all. And within a year, the whole thing collapsed.
Oh, of course. And the interesting thing with the Irish stress test is that they had assumptions about how much would GDP fall. It would be a mild fall. real GDP fell by substantially, like, you know, like it was a much more severe drop. They had assumptions about unemployment. It would be quite mild in terms of the unemployment rising. Well, the real unemployment rate actually rose quite dramatically, more than what they assumed in the 2006 stress test. And the same thing with house prices. You know, they assumed a more milder drop in house prices compared to what actually happened. So it seems to me that based on the Irish experience, either by design or by incompetence, APRA is following the same regulatory mistakes that the Irish have made. And obviously what happened in Ireland isn't anywhere near as severe as what happened in the two depressions that we face in our country's history. So the question is that, well, is anyone sort of awake at the wheel?
And it's fascinating if you think about this, right? Because you've got the Reserve Bank, who arguably took interest rates too low.
Absolutely.
And has driven the debt bubble, right?
Yep.
You've got APRA, who's basically asleep at the wheel with regard to regulation of the banks and a very narrow fixation on financial stability a la capital,
yep. Right?
Or missing a whole bunch of stuff. And then, of course, you've got ASIC, who are doing some things, but you'd arguably perhaps a little better, but still, I think, gaps there. And so you begin to ask whether the whole regulatory system that we've got around the way that our banks are actually supervised are fit for purpose.
I do think that is a fair point.
I wonder whether the Royal Commission may have something to say on that. Interesting thought. Okay, so given what you've said, and given that the real scenario could be a whole lot worse, what is the ultimate implication in terms of what does it mean to people watching this video?
People shouldn't trust the regulators. I think people need to be honest and actually look at the current conditions of the economy, look at what's happened in Australian economic history, and basically ask themselves, why haven't they stress tested against what potentially could happen? Now, because the APRA scenario was, it would be a downturn in China. Now, that potentially could happen, depending on how the downturn happened. I mean, if it was the financial system in China collapsed, which is a possibility given how big the financial bubble in China is, well, that's not going to be a mild downturn of only 4% fall in GDP. It's going to be much more severe than that. But obviously, with the two depressions we've had, it was because a major European bank defaulted. So that is completely plausible. There's a huge risk of sovereign debt crisis in Europe. A lot of the European banks are holding the sovereign debt of a lot of these European countries, particularly say Italy. If the central banks and the regulators lost control, you could see an overseas bank declare insolvency. And obviously all the talk of the financial markets is about Deutsche Bank. I mean, you look at their share price, it's come down quite heavily. There's a lot of speculation about what is their real financial position, to what extent is the German government propping it up, to what extent the German government won't allow Deutsche Bank to fail. But assuming Deutsche Bank failed tonight when the European markets open, that, given how big their derivatives book is, that is catastrophic, way beyond what the chairman actually put in his speech. So you know, you've got the blind leading the blind. And when I, you know, wrote this column and I started, you know, calling a few members of parliament up, instead of saying, did you actually realize what the head of APRA said on the public record compared to what Australia has actually experienced in the past? Well, most of the politicians don't actually you can understand that they're extremely busy, that some of them don't have the expertise. But they didn't actually realize how bad this was. So obviously this is where certain politicians, you know, obviously try to seek out, you know, good advice. And, you know, obviously I know you've spoken to certain politicians, I've spoken to certain politicians, but again, it's like, well, you know, is the politicians and the regulators, are they actually, you know, thinking about this in a mature way that the public can be reassured that if something bad overseas happens, we are going to get through this? And if the head of APRA is putting out these Mickey Mouse economic scenarios, what level of confidence, you know, can one really have?
Well, I think my thought there is, if people want to know what's really going on, they should watch this channel. because we tell it as it is here, and we have the data to support it. That's one of the things that we try and do.
And I was going to say, look, for obviously people watching this episode, obviously, you know, I'd encourage everyone to go read the article that I wrote about it. It's quite long. It's a little bit technical, but once you start to realize what the system is telling you, and how robust is that position, I think you'll realize that there's a lot to be desired.
Okay. So, John, as we've been thinking about this, how big a deal is this?
Well, I actually think that what the APRA chairman actually said is perhaps, probably the biggest public policy scandal of 2018. I mean, the implications of what he said and how deficient, obviously it's deficient in the sense that, your calculations, Liz and David's calculations, are substantially different from what the chairman said. But the scenario that he put forward as the severe but plausible scenario, I mean, it is so underwhelming in terms of the severity of what this could happen. I actually think that this is perhaps the biggest public policy scandal of the year, because unless if the government has a very different model of how things may play out internal to government that they won't tell the public, I fear that we have no one driving the ship and we're sailing straight into the iceberg, and the Australian people are at great risk.
Well, we'll put the link below so that you can go directly there. We'll put this video, of course, in our normal place. It's also available directly from the DFA website, and we'll put that link there too so that people can actually see all of the videos that we've done together. And I'm not sure whether we know what our next one's going to be about, but I suspect it's going to be a follow-on conversation, because there are some very profound implications around debt and how it works off the back of this, isn't there? John, thank you very much for your time today. Once again, I feel slightly uncomfortable at the end of this conversation, but, that's the way it is. So I just want to say thank you to you for spending your time with us here today. And if you've enjoyed watching this, or at least if you found this educational or useful, please do consider joining our Patreon program. There's a link below and also behind me here. That's a way of funding what we're doing and effectively giving us more space to be able to do more of these. Thank you for watching, and check back next time. I'm Martin North, the Principal of Digital Finance Analytics. See you next time.